calling. Now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania.
Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, the co-host, and with me today will be David Hulley and Mike Gregg. In a special episode of Cottage Talk, we will be talking stats in a few different ways when it comes to looking at Fulham Football Club. I look forward to going through this with my co-host, but before we do anything, I have to welcome them both back to the show. First, Mr. Hulley, how you doing?
Hi, Russ. Nice to be back again. Looking forward very much to discussing this kind of different topic tonight, something slightly new and interesting to talk about. Not that it's interesting normally, but you know what I mean. Sometimes it's good to have a fresh topic, and this is something very different, and I hope it'll be an interesting show anyway.
I agree, David. You know, we haven't really done a complete show talking about a topic like this, so I kind of structured it a couple different ways. We'll see where the information takes us, but I thought it would be interesting to talk about stats, also obviously talk about the article that you and I touched on a little bit a couple episodes ago, because I definitely want to get Mike's thoughts on that, but we'll work our way up to it. I want to talk about stats in general before we get there, but before we do anything further, I have to welcome Mr. Mike Gregg back to the show. Mike, how are you doing, my friend?
Hi, Russ. Hey, David. I'm doing fine. Looking forward to seeing where the show goes, really. I know, you know, we have a structure in place, but I'm looking forward to discussing stats and, you know, what's been going on with the Fulham news from that, and stats in relation to you can come at it from an American point of view and how it's used in your sports as well, Russ.
Absolutely, and I plan to throw that in there as well. Mike, listen, you're a fan of the New York Mets, so you understand a little bit about how stats are used. They're huge in baseball. That goes back generations upon generations. Stats has been a big part of that sport. So I am, again, I'm used to stats. In fact, I've got to be honest with you, when it comes to baseball, I'm sick and tired of stats, but they are a big part of that game, how you look at the game, so I understand it. So it's a little bit different when you talk about the game of football and how it's viewed now. And again, it's a big issue with us now at Fulham, so I definitely wanted to talk about it and see if I can relate to it on a different level, like you mentioned, with some of our American sports. But, Mike, I'm going to start with you because I want to break this up in a couple different ways. I want to talk about stats, you know, when we're looking at individual players, but I want to talk about team stats right off the bat. You know, after we watch a match, listen, we go through the stats. You know, sometimes I go through the halftime stats. Sometimes I go through, well, most of the time I go through the full-time stats. So let's start here. What stat, when we go through this during a Cottage Talk post-match show, is most relevant to you when we talk about team stats?
Well, I mean, the most obvious one is the score, isn't it? I mean, no matter what all the stats below it, the one that matters is the score, isn't it, in the end? And, you know, we can talk about total shots, passing accuracy, that kind of thing. I mean, I think if anyone listening, maybe what they should look at is one of the Fulham match reports and the match stats within that. And, you know, total shots is an important one to look at. That you can gauge, are we attacking well? And I've done a bit of work today looking at the Championship. And, you know, we, shots-wise, we average 12 a game. But the best team averages, you know, nearly 16. So we're not that far off. And the worst team averages 10. And so, I mean, what does that tell you? Does it say that we're a team that shoots a lot or not enough? You know, I mean, it's yet we're one of the top goal scorers in the division. So, yeah, I think total shots are important to give you an idea on the attacking side of the team. I mean, shots on target, I'm not too fussed about, really. For me, it's the shots. I mean, I don't know what David thinks there. You know, just on the shots kind of side, do you take more preference in total shots or shots on target?
David?
Well, for me, obviously, yeah, I agree with Mike that the score is the only stat that really counts, but obviously we all know what the score is before we delve into the stats. And sometimes the stats can be a bit of a shock, they can be misleading. But I think for me, the ones I look for straight away, I mean, it's a red herring, but obviously we always look at possession, but I'm going to come to that in a minute. The one that, you know, in terms of shots, obviously the shots on target is the one that really, like, digs for me because, you know, I look at it and think, we've only had, you know, two or three shots on target has been the case sometimes. And I think, yeah, I think that's pretty poor. At the end of the day, goals scored are always going to be, you know, connected with shots on target. Not overall shots or shots off target. It's going to be shots on target. There's going to be an average amount of shots on target which are successful. So just by a very, very crude default, the more shots you have on target, the more goals you're going to get. Like, is the likelihood, obviously. I know we have probably been more efficient than some teams this year where we've probably had less shots on target to score the number of goals we've had than some teams. But still, I think you get my general drift. Obviously, there will be an average for the league of shots on target per goal. So I think shots on target is the real crucial one because it can be misleading as well. You know, you could take lots of shots and from way out, and they can, or they could be really feeble shots that go wide, and they don't really trouble the other team. It's only going to be the shots on target which are going to trouble the goalkeeper and the other team. So for me, I think definitely shots on target, but
okay,
it's part of an overall bigger package as well for me. I look at shots on target, corners. You know, I have this
crosses.
Kind of, as I've said before on shows, I use corners as a kind of a... Corners is sometimes gives me an indication of valid possession. You know, not overall possession, but valid possession. And the more corners you have, it gives you a rule of thumb that you've had possession in the dangerous areas or you've had shots on target. You've been doing dangerous stuff. You know, you don't get a corner normally unless, you know, a defender makes a mistake, let's say, without doing something offensively, which has been productive. So I think shots on target, shots, corners, things like that are the kind of most important ones for me, really.
Okay, what about, I mentioned this as well, you and I have talked about this a great deal before I go to Mike get his thoughts on corners. You've also mentioned crosses. Does that go into a similar category or not as much as corners?
Not as much for me. Obviously, you know, the more crosses in the box, the better. But again, you know, crosses can be a little bit misleading because it's the accuracy of the crosses that counts. And also, if the crosses come to anything, I mean, if the crosses just all sail over the bar or out for a free kick, a goal kick or throw in, no one gets on the end of them. It's crosses, you know, it's only when a cross becomes a shot on target or even a shot, for that matter, when it starts to become more valid. So, yeah, a lot of people have been retweeting, I think in the last couple of days, that classic match we had at Old Trafford a couple of years ago when they had about 15 million crosses and we still got a 2-2 draw. So,
that's right.
Again, you know, I'm using the hyperbole there. Obviously, it wasn't 15 million. It was about 80-something, wasn't it? But still, you know, they've had a lot of crosses and yet it hasn't really affected the overall sort of final score. So, again, it's almost a bit like the possession thing, that it's what you do with it, not how much of it you have, perhaps.
Okay, very interesting. Mike, I want to get your thoughts on both of this because David and I have talked a great deal about corners, and he, as you just said, pretty well, he believes that it's a good indication when you have a good amount of corners of your attacking prowess, and that crosses can be a good step, it can be a little bit misleading. What are your thoughts on both of those statistics?
Yeah, crosses I don't take much notice of because it depends on the style of the team. You might be a team that's playing the ball on the floor and trying to weave your way through. The other way, you might be having wingers trying to get the cross in. And I think we've, you know, widening it a bit with the stats discussion, it's very dangerous, I think, to take one game in isolation. You have to look at a much longer and larger sort of pool of data, and you get a better idea then of how the team plays. So for crosses, for me, it's not. On the defending side, I look at, blocks and things like that, you know, crosses blocked. And look at, you know, that shows one of the issues we've had, isn't it, for the last couple of years is we're not blocking the crosses coming in. But if you look at the stats in the last few weeks, that has improved just slightly. So,
yes,
you know, straight away, there is a stat that shows our style or commitment in a way has changed
progress
defensively,
yes,
in that way. Just to quickly go back to shots on target, it might surprise people, but like I said, I've looked at a championship. The best team averages 4.7 shots a game. The worst team averages 3.2 shots a game on target. So there's not a massive, you know, each team is only getting that sort of 3 or 4 or 5 shots on target. We had 3 the other day. So it's, I was quite surprised by that. It's quite low, isn't it, when you think of the game. So, you know, I just wanted to throw that in there. But, yeah, corners I don't take any notice of at all, because you can win a game 3-0 and not have a corner. I mean, it's I understand where David's coming from with regards. It makes it look as if, like, you've got the pressure and they're defending and they're getting the ball out. But I've seen too many games where corners I always find corners it's a bit random. So, for me, it's not one I take any notice of at all when we discuss the games, you know, post-match and we go
okay
through it. I mean, moving on with regards to shots, I mean, like I say, shots blocked I always find really interesting. So if we take last Saturday's game, you know, Derby blocked 5 and we blocked 3, you see. So, you know, shooting accuracy, that's a waste of time for me. I don't take any notice of that. And key passes, what's a key pass? You know, these are all
things. I was
going
to ask you, Mike. I have no idea. What is a key pass?
Yeah, I mean, Opta have a definition of that, and it's a pass. It's a pass that ends with an event. So be
okay
it a shot, a save, that type of thing. But it's too random. It's too, you know, you don't know what that actual key pass is. So it's one I ignore on the team one. And then also on the players' individual stats, I take no notice of that either.
Okay.
So, yeah, and then, you know, again, looking at it, dribbles, you know, what does that mean? So there's important stats to look at after a game. Possession, David touched on. You can argue whether it's good or bad to have more or less possession. You have Leicester, for example, who have one of the worst possessions in the Premier League and they're top of the table. But I always look at possession, passing accuracy and total passes. And for me, that tells you the style of that team.
Okay, very good. David, what are your thoughts about what Mike just shared about what he looks for?
Oh, I mean, the biggest shock to me is the average shots on target. How low it is and how close it is between the highest and the lowest. I'm sure, you know, quite frustratingly at times, we've conceded many more than that at Fulham against us. You know, shots. Other teams have been getting much too many shots on target against us, as we've seen at times. But the fact how close that is a real surprise. I mean, obviously the average number of shots, there's a little bit more disparity in that, which I suppose you could understand. And although we're somewhere in the middle, I mean, we are, you know, slightly towards the lower end than the upper end, which isn't really a surprise because I think we all agree that the, you know, the number of shots we take needs to be improved upon, which they have been doing lately. I don't read too much from a lot of these things that Mike was saying, you know, the key passes and these other things. As I say, I take it very much with a pinch of salt sometimes and the match to see how it's actually played out as opposed to what the stats say. Obviously, there are times when it's clear one team has been very dominant, whether that's been because of possession or because of shots or because of goals scored even. But I think you have to look at how the match plays. And, you know, I was going to come on to, because we're going to talk about the worst one. And this is where possession is so misleading. And Mike stole my thunder a little bit because I was going to talk about Leicester and say they've got one of the worst possessions, obviously, as we've said.
It's a great example.
The Premier League.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's
so,
a wonderful
I mean,
example because I've watched Leicester City play many times. and they hardly have possession. It's what you do with the possession. We're going to get to that in a second. David, very good point, because I definitely want to get to the least relevant. I think it does involve possession.
Saying,
but, Mike, oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, David.
No, I was saying, that's all I've been saying so many times, how irrelevant possession can be. It's you know, we've had these matches where we've had loads of possession, but unless you do something with it, you know, and as I say, I think, as Mike was saying, that when you put these things together, you get an idea about a style of play. So with Leicester, you'd expect them to be a team who get men behind the ball and are defensively tight, but very good and quick on the break. That's the sort of style I would expect from looking at a team that are, you know, winning matches top of the league, but still don't have that much possession. They are really making the most of it. But, yeah, sorry, carry on anyway.
Okay, very good. Mike, before we move on and talk about the least relevant, I want to ask you about this because I've been watching or looking at a great deal of what I'm about to share. It's not really a stat, but it's something to use as a gauge, and that is you and I have talked about this a great deal. Average position and also heat maps. What do you personally get out of looking at those in helping you understand what has gone on in a match? I'm curious.
Okay, I mean, I know we've spoken about the average position. The average position one, which Fulham show, is useful at times. It has a problem in the fact that it only shows the starting 11, and people like Kearney or even Christensen, who move positions, their final position on the map isn't really relevant. The best, I like the heat maps of a team and also of individuals, which you can get on Who Scored and Squawker as well. And on Squawker, it also gives you their actual touches that they make throughout the game as well. And so I always find them more useful. I like the average position bit on Fulham, but I don't, you know, if the 11 stays settled, I think it's a useful little thing to look at. But if you've watched the game and you've seen players mix positions, you have to ignore them a little bit. But usually it's the defence, you know, the back four is the useful one to look at. That's what I like. So how far the full-backs pushed up, where the centre-backs. And as we've spoken about, you take any of Kit Simons' teams and compare them with the last three or four of Jokanović, and our centre-backs are a good 10 yards, 15 yards further up the pitch.
Higher up.
So, so you can certainly see there is a stat, there is something which, you know, some people don't like, but it does show you there is a change in our positional awareness. But ideally, I like heat maps. I find them, when you put it 11 against 11 in a heat map, unfortunately, I've looked at some for Fulham over the last 2 years, and we've not even entered the 18-yard box, or even used some of the wings. So, you know, everything that David says about, you know, your eyes see what's happening in the game is backed up, you know, in these kind of things. But there are misleading stats as well, absolutely, and ones that should be ignored or just sort of, you know, yes, that's a stat, but it's not really relevant. But, you know, one of the other stats I really like is that, you know, is aerial duels. That's, you know.
That's a good one.
Are we winning? We won on Saturday. So that's a decent one. Yeah, that's a decent one to have as well. And we've been losing a lot of those, and suddenly we're starting again to win them. But I'm going to disagree with David a little bit on possession.
Okay.
Yeah, there is no one rule, so it's not the top six teams that have the most possession of the top six in the championship, but four of the top six, are in there with the most possession and also the most number of passes per game. So possession football is still the long-term best bet, really. You know, I mean, there's a so that's why, you know, if you're going to average 400 passes a game, which is what we're doing virtually, we're going in the right way. But then you look at other stats, and David mentioned it, shots against us, it's horrendous. And anyone who sees some of my retweets from performance analysis, they do a great little graph that shows where we sit with regard to how clinical we are and we don't shoot much, and we have a good scoring record. So we're actually beating the average, beating the mean. And I think, unfortunately, in the last few games, that's caught up with us, and we've stopped scoring. So, you know, there's lots of ways of looking at these things.
Okay. Let's talk about possession. And, David, you've already given a great example of how possession can be misleading because of Leicester City is a great example. What are your thoughts about what Mike just shared?
Well, there's a few things. I mean, just going back to the average positions quickly, I noticed on Saturday against Derby, and I know that, as I say, I take into account that if you have a player who starts in one position and then ends up somewhere else, his average position is going to obviously reflect, you know, the mean of those two places where he was playing. But on Saturday, the actual formation that we ended with, according to the average position at the end of the match, was a 2-6-2, if you saw that. We just had two people in our own half defending. We had six people across the midfield and two up front. And that was because the only two people who were on the average positions who were wide were the fullbacks. That was Richards and Garbett. And then we had basically, inside that was obviously whoever was playing, you know, I know Kaká came on, didn't he? But talking about our first half performance, obviously we had... whoever we had on the right, I forgot who we had on the right. I'm going mad.
Over Ince in the middle.
We had Ince and O'Hara in the middle. And of course, we had Garbett started on the right and LVC on the left. But they were both tucked in, of course, as you would expect. And then, you know, so it appeared like we had a 2-6-2. So it was a, you know, we've been going for this 3-5-2. We actually had even almost better in a way. When you actually look at how it plays out. But, again, as I say, the heat maps are probably a better indication of how it really played out. But going back to the possession issue, I think, you know, I was being slightly frivolous when I said about, you know, the possession can be irrelevant because it can be irrelevant. And you can, you know, this is, you know, lies, damn lies and statistics show. And you can prove, you know, statistics to show you anything, prove any point. And Leicester proved the point that, you know, that possession could be irrelevant. But I do agree with Mike, really, that, you know, I think it's always going to be a trend that the teams that are doing well are going to have more of the ball and more of the play than teams that aren't. I think it's a very logical step. I think it's just, in Fulham's case, we've probably found that we've had a team that know how to hang on to the ball and to get the possession up, but don't do enough with it when they have it. And we've been caught, you know, too many times by teams with quarters on the break, we've lost possession, and although we've had most of the possession, we've been caught on the break and conceded goals from one way or another. So it's possession is important, but it's what you do with it, and also,
right,
I suppose, how you gauge what you're doing with it. Of course, if you have 70% possession and you win a match 5-0, it's pretty clear correlation. But, you know, in these other matches where you know, the possession is perhaps biased towards one team, but the result isn't, then it's, you know, it's harder to break down. It's harder to see what exactly is the, you know, the nub of the matter. And obviously in Fulham's case, we know, as I say, that we've had this reluctance to shoot. We've had this turning round and going backwards when we get into the final third. But it's what tools you use to sort of correlate how good the possession was and how poor it was. And as I say, I use this crude one. I look at corners in relation to possession. If I look at a team, and like I think it was against Derby, the number of corners are pretty equal. I think all the figures really on Saturday probably gave you a true reflection of the match. You saw a game that was fairly even, and
right,
and that obviously the, you know, the possession was pretty even, everything was pretty even. The result was a fair result, I think, in that case. It doesn't always happen like that, obviously. But, as I say, it's how you, at the end of the day, take that possession figure and use it, because I think it's probably one of them that's prone to be the most misleading out of all of them. You can get matches, of course, where, you know, you get matches where one team will have twice as many shots on target as the other, but the team with less will still win. It doesn't always mean that most shots on target, you know, a shot on target can obviously be something that trickles into the hands of the keeper. It doesn't have to be a blockbuster. But I think The Possession is the one that's definitely the one that you would find is the most difficult to interpret at times. Generally,
okay.
Yes, you play well, you have more possession, you win matches, but not always.
Okay, very interesting. And, Mike, I want to go back to you because while David was talking about this, I was thinking about something that you said earlier, attacking passes. Because we're trying to gauge what's going on with Fulham while they have the majority of the possession. And David's mentioned something's not happening in the final third. So let me ask you, if you combine these two stats, can it tell you something? Attacking passes along with total shots.
Well, I mean, I've been trying to work on something, and I'm trying to, you know, find out why we are where we are, or, you know, why teams are at the top and why teams are at the bottom. I mean, one of the ones I came up with is we actually, this one's surprising, right? We've scored 44 goals, but we actually take the most passes per shot. So for every 40 passes per game, we have a shot. So to give you an example, though, Hull, it's 31 passes per shot, and Middlesbrough is 36. So, and then the other four teams in the playoffs are between 32 and 36. So what we're
seeing
is
we hold
on to the ball a long time.
Too long.
So we're above the average of what's required. So when we talk about overplaying it or getting through the edge of the box and not creating a shot, not creating a chance, there's evidence there, I think, in something I've worked out just today that shows that, you know. But then that, you know, it goes to the point of, you know, it's what your eyes see as well. And all that stat is doing is just backing up what me, Dave, you and, you know, 15,000 people see
right. You
know, almost every week is that, you know, we overplay it. And I think one of the things with Jokanović is he's getting us to pass the ball. We certainly are keeping the ball more. We're passing more, but it's all about, I think, at the moment, being solid at the back. And now he's got to do that transition to the forward area. And so attacking passes is one that I like to look at, you know, as a percentage of our total possession, total number of passes. And for me, any passing accuracy over 70% throughout the whole game is a good figure. And
okay.
I think Leicester's about, you know, Leicester is a poor one as well in that kind of area. But it's those stats show what we're seeing, really.
Oh, that's very interesting. I'm glad that you shared that, Mike, because I find it interesting that when you're talking about the teams that are in the top six, their amount of passes to getting a shot is obviously less than Fulham's, and that shows the build-up that it takes too many passes. That's very interesting. David, what are your thoughts about that stat that Mike just came up with?
Well, that's probably one of the least surprising stats we're going to hear, I think, isn't it? We know that we overplay it, that we take too many passes. I mean, that's, you know, I'm just glad that you've been able to confirm that, really, that.
But that backs up what you guys see. That's the whole thing. That's the whole point of this. And I started with Mike about this. You know, we have this argument with other sports here about your eyes are your first barometer, what you guys see. The stats can back up what you see. So the stats are kind of backing up what you have watched, David.
No, that's right. And I think probably not everyone sees it because some people will still be kind of perhaps rose-tinted view, and they think, oh, well, we've had loads of possession that game, we should be winning. You know, we beat them because we beat them on possession. But when you look at, maybe Huddersfield would be an example, Huddersfield away, or something like that, where we've beat them on possession, but we haven't done enough in the right
with
parts
it.
Of the pitch, ultimately. We haven't created the chances to win the game. And I'd say that's what's been, you know, we've been talking about it, Mike, myself and others, on the show most of the season, that You know, we turn back. You know, we've been, you know, we've been blaming Ashley Richards and other people for, you know, going backwards and things. Tom Kearney going round in circles and other people as well. Don't want to particularly pick on anyone, but the general scenario is that no one wants to shoot, and we've definitely seen an improvement in that the last, you know, last couple of games or so.
We have
second half against Hull, I think, and definitely against Derby as well. There was a more willingness to shoot, and that is clearly where we need to improve upon, because
absolutely,
you know, we talked about becoming a tighter unit defensively. The downside of that is we've stopped scoring goals, you know, freely anyway. We haven't been scoring many goals, so we need to do something slightly differently. And I think, look at the number of you know, shots from the edge of the box, outside of the box, that we've conceded, and whether they would, you know, Lonergan could have done better or not is not the point. The point is these teams shot and it was on target, and they asked the question of us, and we're not asking these
right.
questions enough. You know, you take a shot, you know, you score a goal, it goes wide, someone blocks it, the keeper saves it, you might earn a corner from it, but if you don't shoot, you don't get any of those things. You know, you end up,
I agree, David,
just the only thing you gain potentially is, you know, your percentage point of possession is going up. So
right.
certainly, you know, I guess it's kind of, I'm really glad that Mike came up with that stat, but in another way I'm thinking that's the
no,
most bleeding obvious stat of the night so far, you know.
No, it might be, David, but what's great about Mike sharing it, it just backs up what you guys are watching. It, for him to come up with that, it puts the whole picture together. That's why I'm glad that we're talking about this, because until he said that, until Mike brought up that stat, I know it's obvious, but the fact that he brought it up, it just puts it right to you. It's like, oh, that makes sense, because it backs up what you guys are watching. When you guys are at Craven Cottage and you're seeing this, you're seeing the amount of passes, and then you see other teams that it does not take as many passes. That's where that stat really comes into play, and then you're going to the other part of this, David, that I've noticed recently, and I know you guys have also noticed, is that we are shooting more from distance. They need to do more of that, and that's all part of this. It's all part of the puzzle. But guys, just to move on the show a little bit, Mike, I want to go to you, because I know you like to look at stats. Are there individual stats, talking about individual players, that you look at that back up when you watch the player, that say to you, you know what, he had a good match or he had a bad match? I'm curious, because I don't really look as much at individual player stats. Do you?
I tend not to in a single game. As I said earlier, with a lot of these stats, it's about how they do it over a longer term. I mean, the shots per game, a lot of it is in relation to, you know, how that team, what's the style of that team. So someone like Ross McCormick at the moment is averaging, you know, 3 shots per game. You know, Kearney's about 1.5. You know, but and then Beely's 2, and there's nothing dramatic to, you know, there that we're going to say, oh no, that can't be right. But to take it back a little bit there, Russ. You know, we're talking about, you know, we're not shooting enough,
right?
But there is also other. There is, you know, there's lots of stats. You know, all the clubs work with Opta and Prozone and everyone else, and they have much more. You know, they get the paid stats and much more in-depth detail, and they know where the optimal places are to shoot. So the fact that you might only, you know, percentage-wise of goals scored is 1% outside of, you know, 35 yards. So, the, you know, unless you're, you know, I've forgotten his name now, the Stoke midfielder.
Shaqiri.
No, he used to play for Blackpool. Anyway, you don't shoot from outside of 35 yards because it's 1%. And you get 75% of goals within 12 yards of the goal. So, you know, there's
Charlie
a lot of
Adams.
That coming in. Charlie Adams, yeah. Unless you're Charlie Adams and shoot from the halfway line. But teams work on that. You know, somebody like Sam Allardyce, okay, it's not going well for him at the moment, but he's a big believer in these kind of things. You know, it's get you have 20 shots a game on average, you're going to get a goal, you know, that type of thing.
Right.
Over the season,
the percentages.
You get 15 clean sheets in the season, that's going to be worth 30 points to you. You know that, you know, that's how it's going to work out for you. And a lot of, you know, Tony Pulis is another one, you know, these kind of guys. So they will tell their players not to shoot from that position, not from that angle, and get the ball in, get that number of crosses in. So whereas we look at the stats post-match and very much on a game-by-game basis, you know, the clubs, and we're talking about, it's more about players when we talk about them later, you know, player research. But match research and the optimal thing to do for players, the clubs are heavily into it, having been to a couple of seminars about the current trends. And, you know, that's possibly why sometimes, you know, certain teams you look at, why aren't they shooting? And they're being told, you know, get the ball into the 18-yard box. It may create a chance. So they're not gambling as much as maybe as they used to.
Okay, so you're telling me that part of the strategy could be they're playing the percentages instead of shooting from distance so much that the percentages are telling them that they have to get in closer is what you're telling them, what you think is going on.
I'm just using that as one example, Russ, of the way the clubs are using it. And they have, there's a really brilliant video online, and I'll tweet it if people want it. And it's a discussion on how they can drill down to a player's performance through his position in the pitch in a particular formation and say he works in that, but he doesn't work in that one. And it's about Schweinsteiger at Munich and the fact that when he plays as a defensive midfielder, he was scared to make long balls. He would not make a long pass. It would always be a short pass. And as soon as he's played in an advanced position, it all goes wrong. And oddly enough, if you watch him play at the moment, yes, that's exactly what happened. So, I mean, there's so much that you know the clubs are doing, which we're not even seeing, really.
Right.
So anyway, I just wanted to sort of raise that as something. But you wanted to know about players and the stats. So I spoke about shots.
Yes.
Let me just raise a one about defenders. So one that gets mentioned, he made three tackles, he made five tackles, he's brilliant. And then you have Aaron Hughes, who made none, but made two blocks. So the hardest thing in stats, and the whole of football knows it, is how to assess a defender. How do you do that? I think headers is the easiest one. But really, are you a better defender because you make a load of tackles, or are you a better defender because you make a load of blocks, or are you a defender who just keeps his position, holds his man, stops the ball coming through? It's a very difficult one looking at defenders on stats.
Very interesting. David, what are your thoughts about that? Because that really made me think once Mike was talking about how difficult it is to use stats to really gauge how a defender plays.
No, you're right. It's very difficult. I mean, Aaron Hughes, we just used him as an example. He never went to ground, I don't think. He always stayed on his feet, and he's held his position. Consequently, that's why he was very, very rarely booked, because you tend, obviously, to get booked when you go to ground and start lunging in and things, or you go for the tackle and you commit yourself and you miss it. And he didn't. And obviously, we can appreciate now that Aaron Hughes was a great defender for us. But you may find that if you were to look at the stats that he doesn't do the most tackles or the most headers. He was, you know, maybe his role was more to mark while Hanglund was there to do the headers and everything, the ball winning headers. I don't know. I think Aaron Hughes was actually quite competent in the air as well himself. But so I think it is very difficult. I mean, I was going to sort of throw in other things that you can look at, things that they use quite a bit sometimes if you watch a live match is how far a player has run, you know. So has a player who's run more had a better game than one who's run less? You know, have they put more effort in?
That's an interesting one.
Or is it a virtue of their position? Now, I've had the benefit of watching the last two home matches from the halfway line in the main stand, as opposed from the Hammersmith end. So I've noticed much more. I've noticed, for example, how much Jamie O'Hara runs, how he's always on the move. So I think if we measured our players, I would probably wager that Jamie O'Hara runs probably more than anyone else, or has done in the last couple of games, just by looking at, you know, his movement in midfield. But then, obviously, in midfield is probably where you get the most running. Strikers spend a lot of time sort of just holding a line on the last man and waiting for their opportunity. They don't always move, especially the Fulham ones, unfortunately. We're too static off the ball a lot. It's been, has been a complaint from earlier in the season. So I think, you know, it's easy for a midfielder, perhaps a more attacking player, especially obviously people with goals scored is an easy stat to look at for players. To judge strikers, you look at a striker and you see how many goals they score and you think, yes, I'd like him in my team, or no, I wouldn't. And as we've seen in the past, you know, when players have been potentially coming to Fulham, that's something you would look at as a striker. But I don't. For a midfielder, you wouldn't look at necessarily how many passes or tackles they make or how far they run. And this is where, you know, like as I've quoted before on other shows, you know, when you look at something even like FIFA, you know, you have these stats about every player in existence, about their pace, about their tackling, about their heading, and they're judged on a combination of all these factors. And they get an overall rating based on these things. But I think it's, you know, unless you have a clear idea of, you know, like for like, it's very, very difficult, I think, because you can't, within a team, have like for like, because each person has a different role slightly. You know, central midfield will have a different role to someone who's playing wide.
Right.
Defenders will have a different role to those, and strikers have a different role to that, and obviously a goalkeeper a different role again. So there's not much like for like. It's only if you get two people who literally play in the same position with the same role that you can compare like for like. So it's very, very difficult to have individual players. So I think, you know, and this is why we have so much debate perhaps when we rate the players sometimes. I know I wasn't very happy with Fulham's choices on Saturday. I thought Fulham's choices were poor for the men of the match against Derby. I thought both Amabieta and O'Hara played better than the three that were nominated, based on the fact that, I mean, Amabieta, he hardly let Chris Martin out of his pocket, you know, and I did actually joke that it went completely flat about Chris Martin being at the Super Bowl. I said, has he come out of Amabieta's pocket yet? Because Amabieta did a great job on Martin in the main. I was impressed first game back for someone who has not really been that much of a favourite, you know, for us. But I thought he had an excellent game. And I thought O'Hara had an excellent game as well. But yet neither of them were chosen, because it's very much a matter of opinion. Very much a matter of opinion as to what you see in an individual player's performance. Obviously, you know, you don't expect Tom Kearney to be crunching in and winning all the tackles. You don't expect, you know, the last man in defence to be Ross McCormack. So they have clearly defined roles. So, you know, you say you expect Kearney's role to be creative and attacking. You expect other people to have, you know, it's all different. O'Hara to do a middle of the field job, to mop up, to win the ball and to use the ball. You expect the wide men to give you some sort of width and to support the full backs as well. And so, yeah, I don't really know where you go. And short of, you know, looking at them all on the way that FIFA would do it, where you put in, you know, all these different factors, tackling, heading, pace, etc., into some sort of algorithm and coming up with an overall average score, can you really get an idea of perhaps who is a better player? And, of course, in that you find that, you know, the top players in the world, of course, come out with the highest score. I think Fulham's highest player on FIFA is Scott Parker. Yes, I just checked my stats man there. Scott Parker is our highest man. So what does that tell you then? Because I don't think anyone would probably pick Scott Parker as our top player now, although we all appreciate the role that he plays. But he's not even been a regular in the team this season. But yet, according to FIFA, he's our highest-rated player. So what does that tell you?
No, it's interesting, David. And, guys, I want to finish up the show by talking about the situation with Craig Klein. But before we do that, Mike, I want to throw a player at you because, again, I remember looking at some stats from WhoScored.com before we got him, and he was fairly well-rated in the championship last season and came to Fulham. And I had high expectations of him, even though he came on the free transfer. That was Ben Pringle, okay? Ben Pringle has not really worked out at Fulham. For whatever reason, I think lack of pace is probably a factor, but I want you to go back to the beginning of the year and when we got him, because I remember looking at stats and they made him look like a player that could be advantageous to Fulham. Do you remember back to before we got him over the summer and what the stats were on him? Because for whatever reason, it has not worked out for him with the club, and now there's a strong speculation that he could be leaving on loan to Ipswich Town. What are your thoughts about stats, you know, when you bring in a player like a Ben Pringle?
Well, I mean, it's the thing with I won't go over a lot of what David just said, but I mean, things like WhoScored.com and who put the stats together and Squawker as well, they all have an algorithm which comes up with a mark. You know that you've seen it on the thing. The trouble with the WhoScored, I never look at the WhoScored sort of marks out of 10 because it's weighted. It's weighted for defenders, so it seems to me all the time that defenders are the ones who come out of it.
This is true.
Come out of it better. Yeah, and it's a very difficult one. So you know, at a very basic level, for a goalkeeper, if he makes a save, do you give him 10 points? And if I score a goal, or you know, if McCormick scores a goal, do you give him 10 points? So it's how you weight what is the more important event of the game, but. Yeah, with Pringle, he has disappointed. There's no doubt about that. I mean, I was actually looking really forward to him joining, and his stats from last year, where he was the the most important player in their team in some ways. You know, major.
That's
team,
right.
Yes, he's going to be for us, and. It hasn't transpired this year, and and there could be a number of factors there. It could be the move to London. It could be not being the key player anymore, just being another squad player. It could be as simple as Kit Simons being the manager. You know, I mean, it's. I think also the expectations on Pringle were, people wanted a winger. They wanted a left-sided, out-and-out winger, and I think
that's
even.
Right.
Even those of us who saw him last year all said, you know, he's not a winger. He's got lots of energy, but he's not going to get down to the byline and get a crossing. But, I mean, I'm just looking at his records from last year. And, I mean, 7 assists. And, we've not seen him get one for us this year. But he also had 6 yellows, which tells you something about, you know, the way Rotherham played, probably, and maybe he's lost something in the way he's been told to play the game. He's certainly not playing in the centre of midfield like he was for them as much. So, his stats still show that he was a good signing. It hasn't worked out. And sometimes it works out even with a scout's eyes saying, this is the bloke to sign, you sign him, and he still turns out to be bad. So, yeah, his stats are not good this year. He looks like he's going to go off to a playoff side. So, you know, that's an odd one, isn't it? You know, he's not good enough for us who are 6 from bottom, but he's going to go to a team who are fighting for a playoff position. So, you know, I still have some faith in him. Maybe it's just the wrong club for him, wrong time, and you know, I wish him well wherever he goes. I haven't got the hatred towards him as some people do. I know that.
Yeah, no. Listen, Mike. Honestly, I wish him the best, and I just had these expectations similar to what you've already been talking about. That's why I think I'm a little bit disappointed, maybe the fans as well. But I do wish him the best wherever he ends up. But I just find that this interesting because I was following his stats over the summer. They were good. But you just brought up all the factors that might have constituted why he has not worked out well with Fulham. It's interesting. But listen, we only have about 10 minutes left, and I definitely want to get your thoughts on the article. Forget Moneyball, Fulmer are taking football manager approach and hoping of returning to big time. Again, this is an article by Sam Wallace, and this is while you were gone in India, Mike. What were your thoughts when you read the article?
Yeah, I've read both articles, and, well, there's obviously truth to it. He's a good reporter, and he's got good links. Was there a row? Who knows? We are not a team that's being run or picking players to sign or picking an 11 by stats. We even before Khan come along, we have a stats room at Motspur Park. It was manned by five people. I've been in there. You know, screens everywhere, blackboards, you know, loads of facts and figures. We are, any of the top teams in the top two divisions, they all have the same kind of stats guys. It's how you use them. It's a tool.
Exactly.
Has this person come over and upset someone? Possibly. Maybe it's his people skills. Maybe he thought he was more important. Maybe the people he recommended, you know, Jokanović and others just said no. My understanding is there's not one person who picks the players to sign. It's all about getting together and saying yes, no, and we either go and get him or not. And so I read some of the stuff. People really worried that's how we're going to run the club. It's not how we're running the club. And, you know, I'm not concerned about it at all. Apparently he's gone back to America now. The transfer window's ended. But
that's
the process
right.
will continue. We will continue to scout players with people actually at games. We will look at data, just as other teams do, trying to find, you know, those players who are a bargain. And the thing about Moneyball, and you know yourself, having read the book, I'm sure, Russ.
Yes.
It's not about... It's about finding players who at value who other teams have missed or have quality
that's right.
going to help you get the results you want. So when I said earlier on about we need 15 clean sheets, in the baseball terms, they were talking about we need to get on base. So you look for players who are being missed, who stand out, then you send your scouts along, have a look, and then take it from there. But, you know, the thoughts that we're just looking at stats from, you know, Luxembourg and there's a player we should go and sign, I just don't believe.
Well, Mike, listen, I'm glad that you mentioned that because Moneyball was really about finding the players in the land of misfit toys. That's basically what it is, to find the players that have been missed by all the other Major League Baseball teams to fit it in a certain budget. And everything is stats-driven. The way that the Oakland A's played, everything was stats-driven. This is a different situation. So if I'm understanding you correctly, you're not against using stats as a tool, Mike, to help judge a player, as long as we have like you said, the scouts looking at the video and have it as a tool. You're not against it as being part of the whole project, but it's not the one thing making the decision on who we sign as players.
Well, let me just say something about this. In Ross McCormick and Jordan Rhodes, yeah? Two strikers.
Yes.
Who out of the two, I wanted Rhodes. And all I had was people coming and saying, you know, all he does is score goals. All he does is score goals. And look at the stats. McCormick has assists. And in the same, you know, and a minute later, they turn around and say, oh, I don't believe it's stats. Don't, you know, you use stats the way you want them. And that's what we're going to do. We'll use them just like anyone else. And if they shine a light on a player that we've missed or help us focus on someone, then that's what it's going to be useful. So, no, I'm not against them because but you also have to just look at them in context as well. So just because a player scored 40 goals in the national non-league, you know, conference, doesn't mean he's going to be able to play at this level. You've got to go and look at these people as well.
Sure. No, very, very good point. Mike, I'm sorry, David, I want to go to you. I want to get your thoughts on what Mike just shared. You and I have talked about the situation, the article before. So what do you make of what Mike just shared?
Well, Mike's right that stats are just part of the jigsaw, really.
Exactly.
Certainly, if you were judging on signing people purely on stats, it would be a very dangerous precedent. Unless you're signing someone who is exceptional, I don't think you're ever going to get the right answer, because it's not just about, you know, a player's ability in a certain area. You know, you have to look at how they would fit the balance of the team as well. You know, look at Fulham now. We're, you know, in some areas quite heavy, other areas we're quite light. So just because someone was identified as being good doesn't necessarily mean they would fit into the team. I think, you know, the article was perhaps in a way, it was a little bit mischievous, because it's been able to stir up some of the divisions within the fans' view. We have, you know, some people are concerned that the club is run by loonies, I think, or people who have no idea about real football. And I've obviously seen some views which have said that, you know, that this is all rubbish and, you know, we have to stick to the old methods. And I've seen other people saying almost the opposite, that, you know, this is how football is now and we have to embrace these things. But it's about anything in life. It's about balance, isn't it?
You know, exactly.
It's like is there anything you do in life? About, you know, if you want to go and eat healthily, you don't spend your whole life eating only the healthy food and nothing else. You know, you might as well just roll up and die if you're going to be miserable. You've got to have things that you enjoy sometimes. And so
balance.
You've got to look at some of the old ways, some of the new ways. And it's just about, the key to success is finding the right balance. Identifying possible targets and picking the right ones from actually going to see these players, how they perform in a real situation, I think.
Okay, very good there, David. Listen, we only have about 2 minutes and 30 seconds. I want to get Mike's thoughts on one final topic, and that is, Mike, one of the big things I got out of the first article by Sam Wallace was, it seemed, if I'm reading between the lines, that Slavisa Jokanović has final say. Do you read it that way as well?
Final say, possibly, in the fact that these are the players he wants for his first team, yes. I would say that he will say, yes, I agree, that's the player I want. No, I don't fancy him. So, yes, final say. I think he's going to be backed a lot in this summer. So he's the main man in charge.
That's what I was kind of getting at. That's what the article, you know, for everything that has been talked about, that was the big talking point that I got out of it. The biggest positive was, like you said, that they're going to back him, and that's a major positive to come out of that article. For everything else that has been said about stats, the fact that it seems like that Slavisa will get the backing from the club, that to me is the biggest positive to come out of that article. All right, guys, listen, this was a great show. Unfortunately, the show is ending. Mike, thank you so much for joining me tonight. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. It's good to talk about something else in the you know, what's affecting the club and football in general. It's a subject I like, so I'm glad we had a chance to talk about it.
I am too. David, I hope you enjoyed the show, my friend, before we go.
You know, it's always a pleasure to come on, and it was, as Mike said, it was good to look at things slightly differently for a change, just, you know, in this opportunity. And so thanks for inviting me, and thanks, Mike, for your input.
Okay, guys, you were both fantastic. It's a fast hour, but the hour is up. For David and Mike, I'm Russ Coleman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, guys.
Cheers, bye.
Cheers, guys. See you later.
Boys and